I Norge har 95% av eleverna den samme læreplanen for Corelli. Men kan du tenke deg en situasjon der det var annerledes? Der hver kommune hadde ansvar for å lage sin helt egne læreplan, i samarbeid med tros- og livssynssamfunnet i sin region? Legg på et betydelig større antall religiøse friskoler, og noen store kjeder med private skoler som kan lage sine helt egne Corelli-varianter som går på tvers av de lokalt bestemte planene, og du begynner å nærme deg situasjonen i England. Stedet der hver reform ikke erstatter den gamle, men heller blir plassert litt sånn halvveis oppå, bare som for å sikre mest mulig kompleksitet. Dagens episode av Corelli-podden er et nytt intervju fra utenrikskorrespondent Oddrun Bråten, som denne gangen har snakket med enda en rutinert ringrev fra engelsk Religious Education. Vi får høre om det å være faglig rådgiver for lokale læreplanmyndigheter, og en spennende introduksjon til konseptet Big Ideas for Religious Education. Og om du er med oss helt til slutten av episoden, får du et godt tips om en internasjonal og praktisk orientert konferanse for Corelli-lærere. Du hører på Corelli-podden. Jeg heter Inge Andersland, og i dag snakker Oddrun med Dave Francis.
Det skal handle om skole, religion og kristendom.
Jeg mener at ingen skal tvinges til å gå på skolegudstjeneste.
Lærerstudentene har kunnskap om disse evnene.
Faget vil inneholde hele 50% kristendom og bare 50% vranglære.
Kompetansemålene i faget.
Det K-en gjør nå er at den bare markerer at kristendommen har en særlig historie hos oss. Og det er jo sant.
Den K-en kom til for 3,5 år siden. Den var ikke der før.
Det handler først og fremst ikke om K-en.
RLE-faget har jo en litt brokete historie.
Abonnerer de selv på KRLE-podden som lærer?
Ja, det er en selvfølgelig ting.
Hei, Oddrun. Velkommen tilbake i studio.
Takk, Inge. Flott å være tilbake.
Vi i KRLE-podden er veldig glad for at vi har fått oss en utenrikskorrespondent. Og i forrige episode av denne serien med dine intervjuer, så var det kanskje noen som la merke til at det var en mannsstemme som kom med noen kommentarer underveis i samtalen som du hadde med Denise Kurs. Og i dag skal vi få høre mer om han, eller hva?
Ja, det skal vi. Det var Dave Francis.
Nettopp. Og for min del så må jeg tilstå at det var et nyere navn enn Denise Kurs. Hvem er Dave Francis, og hva har hans rolle i det engelske religious education-feltet vært?
Ja, han har vært med like lenge som sin kone, Denise Kurs. For eksempel så deltok de begge i SHAP-konferanser, The SHAP Working Party on World Religions in Education, var et initiativ fra professoren Ninian Smart, F.H. Hillard og Jeffrey Parender i 1969. De ønsket å fremme sammenlignende perspektiver i religionsundervisningen. Gruppa inkluderte også lærere og hadde jevnlige møter og konferanser helt opp til nyere tid. Hmm. Og ja, kolleger fra Norge har også deltatt. Mens både Denise og Dave har vært oppriktig opptatt av faget i praksis, er Dave den som har jobbet tettere på praktisk undervisning i lengre tid. Som lærer og senere veileder for skoler i faget, en såkalt advisor, for ulike lokale skolemyndigheter, og også for ulike SACRES, Standing Advisory Council, SACRES.
Okay. Ja.
Ja, så, og det er faktisk ganske imponerende at han faktisk har vært advisor for flere ulike SACRES og så videre, så jeg tror han må ha hatt en høy stjerne i skolemiljøet. Ja. Jeg forstår det sånn. Tilsvarende veilederrolle har vi ikke i Norge. Det kunne vi ha hatt. Det er en spennende tanke. Men det er ingen som er eksperter på fag som driver veileder, i hvert fall ikke i KRLE, som jeg vet om.
Nei.
De har ofte vært med Denise på akademiske konferanser, der jeg har truffet dem begge, sånn som ISREV, International Seminar for Religious Education and Values, og Nordic Conference for Religious Education. Ja. Dette er jo akademiske konferanser. Vi hadde Nordic NCRE i Trondheim i 2019, og da var de her begge to.
Ja.
Men jeg har også truffet Men også har Denise fulgt med Dave på mer lærerorienterte konferanser, for eksempel EFTRE. Og EFTRE står for The European Forum for Teachers of Religious Education, som en internasjonal konferanse for lærere, religionslærere.
Ja.
Og flere norske har vært med historisk, men det ikke så mange med der nå, etter jeg forstår. Jeg har selv deltatt på to EFTRE-konferanser også. Jeg tror jeg kan anbefale norske lærere å bli med der.
Ja.
Så ekteparet representerer jo en ideell kombinasjon av teoretiske og praktiske kunnskaper i faget, sånn som jeg selv opptatt av.
Veldig spennende. Og jeg kan bare si, altså, vi kommer til å legge lenker til disse forskjellige konferansesidene i episodebeskrivelsen, så kan folk klikke seg inn og se hva det du snakker om her. Men du, før vi går til intervjuet med Dave, kan ikke du fortsette litt på den innledningen som du ga i forrige episode, om forskjellene på norsk og engelsk skole?
Ja, for generelle forskjeller så må vi vise til forrige episode da, men noen hovedforskjeller jo det her med at det mange ulike typer skoler i England, og at læreplanene for akkurat religionsfaget lages lokalt.
Ja.
Når vi skal forstå hva Dave snakker om, så kommer vi fort ned i en underskog av begreper i den kompliserte og ganske annerledes skolevirkeligheten i England. Et av dem jo SACRES, Standing Advisory Council on Religious Education. Rett og slett et permanent rådgivende organ i hvert skoledistrikt. England har local authorities, altså lokale skolemyndigheter, det har vi jo i Norge også, men de har litt ulike roller. Og for eksempel i England så fastsettes jo disse læreplanene lokalt, som kalles local agreed syllabuses, som fastsettes lokalt. Enkelt kunne man si at primary school tilsvarer norsk barneskole, secondary school, norsk ungdomsskole og upper secondary norsk videregående, men dette faktisk ikke riktig, vil jeg mene som komparatist. Og at det en typisk språkfeil forenkling som kan gjøre at vi misforstår hverandre, for eksempel på internasjonale konferanser. Skolesystemene i seg selv kan være ganske forskjellige mellom land, og dette noe vi må ta i betraktning når vi diskuterer enkeltfag. I England så primary for barn fra 5 til 11, og secondary for elever fra 11 til 18. Ved 11 år så det en viktig test, såkalt 11 plus, som avgjør hvilke skoler man kan gå videre på. Og noen ganger så har secondary schools, da kommer man videre på secondary school, så noen av de har såkalt sixth form, som to år påbygning som tilsvarer upper secondary, som altså videregående nivået i norske systemet. Henger du med, Inge?
Ja, det bare så vidt på slutten her, altså. Det er heftig opplegg.
Ja, det kan jeg være enig i, egentlig. I tillegg så det jo sånn at secondary school skiller seg ganske mye både fra norsk ungdomsskole og videregående skole, sånn som jeg forstår det. Det dreier seg om en spesialisering i fag og eksamener. De får såkalte General Certificate of Secondary Education, GCSE. Dette et begrep du vil høre ofte hvis du snakker med engelske i utdanningssystemet. Og til slutt så kan de ta A-levels. Du har GCSE, som eksamener i fag som du har valgt, og så har du i tillegg A-levels, advanced levels, i noen utvalgte fag. Da. Og da du spesialisert, og dine A-levels, det vil være typisk være det du går videre med i høyere utdanning.
Ja. Så de spesialiserer seg mye tidligere enn folk gjør i norsk sammenheng, da, som har liksom en sånn allmenn videregående, helt frem til 19, tar artium, og så spesialiserer man seg på universitetet.
Ja, nei,
de begynner det egentlig nesten fra de 11 da, på en måte.
Ja, det vi gjør det. Men, som jeg forstår det.
Har det endret seg i senere tid, dette systemet?
Ja da, det kompliserte engelske skolesystemet, det endrer seg også stadig. Og det, som jeg oppfatter at det en tendens til at reformer innføres basert på en form for frivillighet, som gjør at man beholder gamle systemer, og så får man nye i tillegg. For sånn som comprehensive school, så var en type skoler som ble innført i en periode som ikke sila elever på 11 pluss, men som var comprehensive. Ja. Sant? Men I det siste så har det foregått en akademisering, akademisation, som vi vil høre at Dave Francis snakker om, og det gode grunner til å snakke om det der nå. Det preger nok utviklingen der i stor grad, og det går ut på at skoler har blitt oppmuntret til å spesialisere seg, profilere seg, og får ekstra finansiering om de gjør det. Og dette ment som et middel til forbedring ved skoler som skårer lavt ved inspeksjon.
Nettopp.
Og gjennom det så får skolen tilsynelatende en frihet da, det profilerer seg, og da blir de mer uavhengig av disse lokale skolemyndighetene som fortsatt er der, men som da er svekka, kan vi høre. Samtidig så innebærer dette også en økt privatisering, der skolene må skaffe sponsorer. Skolene drives i stadig større grad av trusts, en form for veldedige organisasjoner, som riktig nok ikke tjener penger på skolen, men som må skaffe midlene, for eksempel gjennom lokale filantroper og rike onkler og andre som gjerne vil eie eller ha en flytelse over en skole.
Ja.
Så ja, det veldig annerledes. Dette hadde ikke gått i Norge.
Nei, vi hadde det ikke.
Nei. Så i episoden så snakker Dave Francis mye om big ideas, og det er derimot en tenkemåte som er fra naturfag, som vi etter hvert kjenner til, og som også har satt sitt preg på de nye norske læreplanene fra 2020, ved at man tenker at heller enn en masse detaljer og fakta, så skal man definere hva som er fagens viktigste kjerne, i LK20 kalt kjerneelementer.
Ja.
Og dette, tenker jeg, er ekstra relevant for norsk skole nå, samtidig som en viktig forskjell er at mens dette har kommet inn i nasjonale læreplaner i Norge, er det i England noe enkelte aktører jobber med, mer som en sånn opplevd nødvendig bevegelse nedenfra. Noe må skje med skolen, noe må skje med faget i vår skole, og så finner man en ressurs, og da kan det være for eksempel Big Ideas.
Så prøver han å få det inn til disse her lokale authoritiesene.
Ja, eller at eller man bare akademi. Tar det. Hvis du et akademi, så tror ikke du trenger å gå veien om
Nei,
local authorities.
Nei, sant? Da kan de bare plukke det opp.
Men local authorities kan jo pushe det da, hvis de synes dette her en god idé.
Ja.
Hvis de forstår det rett. Jeg må ta forbehold hele tiden her.
Du, takk, Oddrun. Jeg liker dette kurset om forskjellene på Norge og England, som du bygger rundt disse intervjuene. På en måte så gjør jo det at vi får et lite innblikk i doktorgradsarbeidet og den boka der du skriver om det, samtidig som vi lærer om utlandet. Det veldig snedig. Men nå må vi få høre Dave Francis i egen person. Ja, og så kan vi jo røpe at det faktisk blir et lite gjenhør med Denise Kurs underveis i denne episoden her også. Skal vi gå til intervjuet?
Det gjør vi.
So I'm Dave Francis. I'm currently working on the Big Ideas for RE project with Denise and our colleague Barbara Winterskill. Previously I was a teacher for about 20 years and the head of Department of Religion and Philosophy in an upper secondary school. I retrained as a primary teacher and took up advising teachers in schools for some years, eventually making up a whole job in different local authorities. I moved on to a lead consultant role with RE Online, which I did for about 5 or 6 years, and then I've been advising SACRES, the Standing Advisory Councils for Religious Education in the local area, and published a handful of school textbooks, and then really have been, since retirement, have been working on Big Ideas as a kind of retirement project. The advisory system has changed over the years in England and Wales. When I started advisory work in the sort of mid to late 90s, we were employed by local authorities, of which there are about 150 in England. And each authority, more or less, had a team of advisors representing each subject of the curriculum. And these advisors would go into schools to help individual teachers or departments to improve their subject knowledge and their teaching techniques, and to try to bring about overall school improvement that would obviously benefit the children. Over the years, local authorities have had less money to hire and pay such people as full-time advisors, and so that service has gradually been reduced down to almost nothing now in terms of subject advice and help for teachers, so that those people who continue to be employed by local authorities now deal with whole school issues and more or less have to spend their time helping senior managers in schools to manage any difficulties that that they may happen to experience. And often based on the inspection service going into schools, bringing up problems that then need to be addressed, that kind of thing. As far as religious education goes, there continues to be a number of people working in advisory roles, often as a part-time job, but sometimes full-time, for example, working for a diocese. So the Diocese of the Church of England still employ education advisors. Again, most of those spend a lot of time dealing with whole school issues, head teacher appointments for church schools and things like that. But there is generally a person who will have responsibility for religious education and collective worship, which is another thing again. And those people will generally support a system of sacres. And a sacre is a standing advisory council for religious education. And each local authority must, by law, have a sacre. The job of a sacre is, first of all, to agree a syllabus for religious education in their local authority area. And so from their number, a separate committee will be formed to deal with a review and an agreement over a syllabus programme for religious education. The sacra itself is made up of four groups, so that might be interesting for your listeners to know about. So the first group is the Church of England, which therefore has a veto over any decision about a religious education syllabus in their area. The second group is other Christian denominations and other religions and now worldviews, because it's been decided that humanism, for example, ought to be represented on an equal basis with other religions and worldviews. The third group is teachers, so teachers' representatives will be part of any local authority sacre. And the fourth group is the local authority itself, which may be a senior education advisor or a councillor, for example, or several councillors, sometimes in big authorities. So they're a kind of unique way of deciding how religious education is going to be set up in any particular area. Now, the complication that you probably need to know about is that in recent years, schools have been... the situation for schools has changed. Every local authority school used to have to follow the locally agreed syllabus, which was agreed by the Standing Advisory Council's conference. Now, under academisation, most schools who've become academies do not have to follow that syllabus. They can choose one from another local area, they can invent their own, or they can follow one that they bought in from a national organisation such as RE Today. So there's a lot more freedom for schools now to choose the kind of religious education that they want.
Yeah,
then you've got church schools as well, so they might follow a diocesan syllabus.
There are so many specific differences
there
in
are.
The Norwegian scene from what you said.
Yeah.
But the first is that the syllabus is made
locally.
It is, yeah.
Which is, I think, is interesting because then it is reflecting the local sort of makeup.
That's the idea.
Tell me about the Big Ideas project.
Well, Barbara Winterskill was the leading light behind this. She brought together teachers and academics and other RE professionals from across the country to get together in a... Well, we had a farmhouse, didn't we,
in Devon.
Dartmoor, in Devon.
Oh.
And we had... Was it a weekend or a few days?
A few days there.
Where our idea was to come up with big ideas for RE. Mm-hmm. And her inspiration was two American academics who wrote a groundbreaking book called The Curriculum by Design, Grant Wiggins and Jay McTighe.
Oh, really?
And this was the... You know about that?
Yeah, I know about that.
Yeah. So this was the stimulus for the project, which people who Barbara had invited had obviously kind of bought into the idea of thinking this is something worth doing, because it shifts the emphasis of what happens in the classroom away from a concentration on individual religions or worldviews. So instead of doing a term on Islam, followed by a term on Christianity, followed by a term on Judaism, what you do is you work out what are the key lenses through which the available content in the huge content that's available in religions of the world can best be seen, brought together, built into a program which progressively develops children's deeper and deeper understanding of what they're looking at, so that when they come across new information or a new religion that they haven't heard of before, they know how to interpret it, how to relate to it, how to understand it, how to place it in context. Therefore it becomes part of their own development of their own personal worldview, because that inevitably engages with their own way of looking at the world.
Well, that is so interesting on several levels, because yes, I know the reference, but also another key idea sort of following the new curriculum is this idea of deep learning.
That's right.
And we are trying to figure out what does that mean?
Yeah.
And what does that mean in practical terms? That is the project that I'm working with, the INDEE project.
Yeah. Well, for us, you know, it's not just about assembling a load of facts. We've got one syllabus in an area close to here, for example, which I think takes quite a superficial view of knowledge, in that, for example, in the first year of school, children might learn one parable of Jesus. In the second year they might know three parables of Jesus, and that's, you know, for them that's seen as a kind of progression. But that's not what we mean by deep learning. So for us, the knowledge that is gained by pupils relates to these big ideas, which are at the heart of good learning in the subject.
Yeah, and that is also because one an aspect of the definition of the deep learning in the new curriculum is that pupils are to be able to use what is learned in new situations.
That's right.
So that fits so well with what you're saying there.
Yeah. You have this concept of transferable...
Transferable questions.
Transferable questions. So each of the big ideas, as it progresses, it's described differently as you go through the age groups. It's progressively deeper. And... there are always transferable questions that you take with you. You might forget the facts you've learnt about a certain religion, but you keep that question that will be relevant in your life, not just for school and passing exams, but for later in life, in adult life, when you come across other people and in your personal life as well.
And you really need to develop that worldview concept as well.
Yes, so, definitely.
You know, what does that mean?
Absolutely. That's one of those transferable questions. What is a worldview? What is it to lead a good life?
You know,
that's something which you revisit time and time again. And you may learn from one story from a religion, which you then maybe return to another.
Maybe we should name which what are the big ideas? Because I know there are six,
yes,
as
there
you
are.
Define
yeah,
them.
Yeah. No, that's a test. I've got to remember them. So the first one is about diversity, change and continuity.
Mm.
That means, you know, every religion or worldview is subject to change or the forces of change. Some change more than others, though. Some try to hang on and keep that continuity going. So that's the first big idea, really. So young people are learning about diversity, change, all of these kinds of big ideas. The second one is about the way that the religions and worldviews communicate their own faiths, beliefs, practices, and so on. And this is the most creative of the six big ideas. It's the one to do with art, with music, with architecture, all of those great creative...
That needs to be in there.
...human things, which sometimes gets forgotten in religious education. But, you know, when you go anywhere, you know, what do? You look at, you see things that people
that
have produced.
That is a kind of deep, which doesn't... It's not exclusive to, you know, it's not elitist.
That's
because
right.
Because that is one of the issues with this deep idea.
And it brings in the emotional side and the... When people can't express things in intellectual words, they express it through creative arts.
Can we call that one words
and beyond? Because it also looks at interpretation and the different forms. It's not just the different forms of art, it's the different forms of literature. So if I'm reading a text, what sort of text is it? You know, is it... How am I supposed to understand it? That so the concepts of myth and symbol and poetry and how a scientific description is different from a poem, and you get you should not confuse one with the other, and get a feeling for different types of literature as well as different types of art, and it's very, very important.
Yeah,
I think.
Vital.
And the third
one we call a good life.
Oh, yeah.
So this is about the moral and ethical dilemmas and issues of life. And, of course, every religion and worldview has mountains to say about how you should live a good life. It might range from commandments to precepts, stories about good behaviour, bad behaviour, all of these kind of things. So that's a massive area, but obviously vital for understanding religions are saying about their values, their... recommendations and demands really on people and their behaviour.
And also stressing that it's diverse within traditions, that it's not just arguments between traditions, it's within traditions. Most things are controversial and there are different viewpoints.
And this is an important point, of course, as well, that these big ideas are not mutually exclusive, because Denise is talking about diversity within traditions there. So that's a bit of big idea one together with big idea three. So you can see you might be starting off looking at something that's very big idea three, but then you kind of cross-fertilise that with other aspects as well.
And number four?
Fourth one is to do with experience and the way that people actually experience sometimes very strange things in life and interpret them. So we're talking about mystery, big concepts of mystery, of meaning, of interpretation of experience. We're talking about life-changing experiences, maybe conversion experiences as well, but also just the appreciation of the ordinary things of life. And of course, religions and worldviews have a lot to say about this area and a lot of stories about how people have interpreted experience, sometimes in terms of divine intervention or divine influence over scripture, and sometimes through, you know, what we might call more rational, not involving any kind of divine
just all of life,
the universe, all of these kinds of things.
I think people sometimes neglect this angle when they see religions and worldviews as just about ideas and intellectual debates and doctrines and beliefs, is that much of people's worldviews come from their experience and the things that have happened to them and how they interpret those experiences. And we also decided that's where ritual fits. So people can misunderstand ritual and see it, you know, it's sort of people misunderstand ritual as ritualistic, that it's just things people do with no meaning.
Yeah, and, empty.
But that in traditions, ceremonies and rituals are used both to express people's feelings and emotions and beliefs, but may also be the way in which they are brought about.
Yeah, packed with meaning often.
That's packed with meaning.
Any ritual could, you know, getting married.
Yeah, and through...
How come you get married through a ritual? It's exactly. Packed with meaning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
acting.
It may bring about an experience.
Yeah.
Being in joining in a ritual may bring about an experience.
Yeah.
So this sort of... Side,
I'm also looking for this concept of Eliade, of the holy which shows itself. What is it? The epiphany?
No. Epiphany, could be.
Is it?
Yeah. Manifestation.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to that later. We all still have at least one.
Two more to go.
Okay, five.
Let's do the five.
So our fifth one is called Influence and Power. And this is really to do with the interaction between religions and worldviews and the societies in which they find themselves. And of course, this is a two-way thing going on here. The state might influence the religion might influence the state. There's different forms of relationship between states and religions in the world. Sometimes you might have a religion which is the state religion, where most people belong to it and it's kind of expected. There may be more or less tolerance of other faiths, for example. So this is about, but it's more than looking at that relationship, is also in a more personal way looking at what influences individual children in their life, such as their family, their peers, maybe social,
social and political.
Political.
And some teachers find that a bit frightening, that religion can be mixed, and worldviews can be mixed up with political things.
But it always is.
But it always is.
Throughout history, it's just a matter of angle.
Exactly. Some teachers we found are a bit afraid of this because they think it might be too difficult.
But I think it's important to have this sort of political side of religion, not to put that to one side, for instance, if you talk to historians, it seems like this is the main approach to religion. How did it intervene in the development of the state and such? And then maybe as in religious education, more traditionally, you're interested in but people's religious lives, what it means to people. But the political side is also a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so we'll look at what's happening in France at the moment and the attitudes to the wearing of the hijab and how that contrasts with other attitudes in other countries. We've had Home Secretary recently saying that the multicultural experiment has failed. Well, what does she mean by multicultural?
And what's the alternative?
And so these questions, this brings up another important point about the whole Big Ideas project, which is trying to make things very relevant. We were talking a little bit earlier about what's relevant to young people today, and making sure that there are things that are in the news at the moment can be part of the religious education program.
Let's move on to number six, and then the web pages.
So the sixth one is a kind of all-encompassing one we call the big picture. Now here, schools, teachers can select maybe one religion, for example, and really focus on it in terms of their big picture of the world, the life, the universe and everything. So what are the key big issues in life, life and death, life after death, the meaning of suffering in the world, is there any purpose to life, all those big sort of questions. Maybe you could focus on one tradition, or you could compare a couple of different traditions and work out what they are saying, what's their big picture of the world, so you really get a feel for that religion or that worldview. So in an exemplar for our website that I've been writing recently, I've looked at humanism and Islam. Not to make children think, is one better than the other, but to appreciate two very different ways of looking at all of those big questions of life and death and meaning.
And if you understood those two, then you could transfer
That's exactly. The transferability.
Other two.
That's the idea. Yeah. And of course, schools might choose to focus on different religions according to their own setting and their own foundation. So if a school has got a religious foundation, you know, they might focus on their own faith for one of those big idea six units. But then why not focus on an alternative so that their children get a wider picture?
I think this is very much in keeping also with the new Norwegian curriculum, because it's a little bit more open than it used to be. So that teachers and schools are free to maybe teach some other religions than I've traditionally done. And that any kind of example really can do the work towards the understanding.
Exactly, that's exactly it. Because the important thing for the children to come away with is not a lot of information about one particular festival or something, but to have got the idea, like we've just been saying, that religions and worldviews have a whole picture of the universe where all the bits fit together, or that they all have an influence and are influenced by politics and society. That's the idea they need to get, rather than... It's nice if they can remember a lot of...
And then it's also, from that point, you can really... If you reach that point, then you can really have some reflections on your own position.
Exactly.
That's and how what influences you and... Yeah. Which influencers to follow or unfollow.
So
that might well be a subject for, you know, a practical example in the classroom. Looking at, you know, the social influences and the reasons why people follow them.
Yeah.
To make a critique of that whole thing.
Yeah.
Of celebrity, you know.
Yeah.
So you need the website.
Yeah.
Yes. I know that there is now a website on the big ideas.
Yeah.
And I haven't explored it, but I understand that you are key in making it. We'll make sure it will be available for people to find.
Yes.
With this recording, but tell us about it.
So it's bigideasforre.org.
Yeah,
and on there there'll be an outline of what we've been talking about so far. What are the big ideas? What's the underpinning philosophy of education that the big ideas have been developed from? And then a practical outworking of those big ideas into examples that can be used in the classroom. So each of those big ideas is obviously, it can be quite complicated and deep. So how does that look for a 5-year-old in the classroom? How does it look for a 7-year-old, 11, 14, 18? How does it look in the early years, you know, ages 3 to 5? So we've now developed a medium term program for all of those different age groups, looking at the key ideas that might be appropriate to be taught for those children in relation to each of those big ideas. And then our latest work has been to unpack that, working with dozens of teachers, advisors, teacher trainers, other professionals, in actually writing lesson plans. So for maybe a whole term, which might be, you know, 12, 13, 14 weeks worth of lessons, relating those to the key questions relating to the age group for that big idea, maybe using other big ideas across to integrate with the key focus, but usually just focusing on the one big idea, and unpacking that in terms of learning objectives and individual lesson plans, which are relevant and to some extent go beyond the traditional religious education lessons, because we try and focus on what we call RE Live. You know, why is what we're doing in the classroom today a live event? Why should you care about it as a 7-year-old, as a 10-year-old, as a whatever? What's the point of it? How does that relate to me? What am I learning? How am I deepening my understanding of what really matters. Mm-hmm. So that's been the emphasis of the exemplars or units of learning, which we've developed for the site, and people can see that all on the website.
Yeah, I think what we don't know is how all of this translates to the actual Norwegian curriculum. Mm-hmm. We have to look, but I would think that the smartest thing to do would be for teachers themselves to go on that site and look, and at the very least, that can be seen as examples of how this can be done.
Exactly.
And then you can look at your own aims for the teaching, and then you can see whether you can use anything of that, either by idea or maybe even some of the topics are similar topics that you can more or less use some of those exemplars that you've developed.
Some of them will translate quite well, I think. Others might be more specific to an English context.
Yeah.
For example, one of the ones I've been working on recently uses statistics from the recent census of populations in the UK.
Mm.
You could easily find examples from your own country to illustrate the same point, about the changing nature of religious affiliation.
I thought I'd ask you about this EFTRA conference.
Mm.
It's an international conference, and it's for teachers.
Yes.
And you've been involved over many years.
Yeah, probably 20 years, I should think.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us a little bit about this conference?
Mm.
Maybe reasons to recommend it to Norwegian teachers, because it's open for any teacher to opt in.
It is. That's right,
And some researchers. It's both.
It is, And a lot of teacher trainers and researchers belong to EFTRA. The conference happens every 3 years. Apart from during the pandemic, it was suspended for 1 year, but I think they're going back to the 2 year. They'll do another one in 2 years' time, so they're back on the 3 year cycle. But it's a great organisation for bringing together ideas from across Europe. So you've got people largely from North European countries, but not exclusively. You know, we have had French and Greek and Italian now members. People have come from Russia. And so there's been an expansion of the original idea, which I think was mainly North European, Scandinavian, British countries were involved in its formation. And it's a marvellous opportunity, really, for teachers to get to connect with the research that's going on that makes a practical difference to the actual teaching of the subject in the classroom. Because that's one of the main principles of the organisation, is to attempt to bring together researchers with practitioners to try to make some improvement in the religious education across the European countries. And of course, religious education takes place in so many different contexts across Europe that it's just so fascinating to learn about how the subject is being delivered, perhaps in a faith school context, where that's the only way in which RE takes place, through to the more open, kind of inclusive approach, RE for everybody approach that we have in the UK and to some extent in other countries as well. So fascinating to learn from each other. But really the emphasis is on practical stuff, you know. So teachers and so on who attend the conference come away with a lot of ideas and new perspectives on the teaching of their subject, and it kind of fires your imagination. So I definitely recommend
and
it.
Also practical materials.
Practical materials.
It's not just academic papers.
Yeah.
It is workshops on, you know, here are some really great lessons that work.
Yep.
So, but to try to put a little bit tricky question, what would a Norwegian teacher in an inclusive Norwegian context, what could he or she learn from an Italian Catholic teacher?
Well, for example, you know, we heard about the recent Rome conference from people in teacher training talking about how they were expanding the style of religious education, even within a Catholic framework, so that it was much more of an inclusive kind of approach to the subject. And it just makes you think as well about the children in your classroom who have got a religious background and a setting, just to take that seriously as, you know, that's a way of life and of being, a way of looking at the world that should have some respect, you know, and it's something which I think teachers, you know, from a more inclusive, natural background, perhaps sometimes forget that there are children in the classroom with whose families have deeply held convictions, and to hear about those contexts is good as well.
Yeah, to understand those worldviews. And I understand there was one this summer in Italy.
Yes.
It was wonderful, was it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
It looked wonderful from the pictures that I saw.
Well, it was nice to be in Rome, of course. I hadn't been before, so it was nice for me to have a few extra days at the conference with Denise to explore the city a bit. Mm. But the conference itself was great, and there were keynote speakers and workshops from right across Europe with some very practical ideas about how teachers might expand their repertoire of techniques, for example, in making films, short films and videos, for example. We had a good demonstration of how that might take place to celebrate your local town or area. And what the students did in this particular example was they went out and interviewed people in their local town from different religious perspectives. So, you know, okay, we've heard there are Muslims in our town, let's go and find them and hear about their life. You know, we have a synagogue maybe, let's go and talk to some Jewish people about their perspectives of life in our town. And here are some Christians, and here are some people with a humanist worldview. And so the young people went out and interviewed people, and therefore developed their appreciation of the diversity that otherwise they might overlook in their own
encounters.
Through the encounters with and making something positive and creative like a short film.
Du har hørt en episode av KRLE-podden. Og hvis du liker disse utenrikskorrespondentintervjuene til Oddrun Bråten, kan du glede deg til fortsettelsen denne våren. Vi har flere intervjuer på vei. KRLE-podden har blitt en forening. Gå inn på www.krlepodden.com og sjekk ut hvordan du kan melde deg inn og støtte podcasten. Musikken i episoden var ved Lee Rosevear. Takk for at du hørte på.